The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
I've been on panels with military people who, you know, claim that they've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
Shiny concentric circles that caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
They had very large eyes, and, you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Today is a different kind of program, if you haven't heard us before. And this is the first show for some of you, as we are now on the affiliate AllOneBroadcast.com internet radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In theory, at that time, I should be in the chat room to interact with you and answer questions. It's a special show today where there's no news in the beginning like we usually have, but I just got back from the Symposium on Official Scientific Investigations of UAP/UFOs in North Carolina. This show will be a series of short clip interviews that I did on location. I couldn't fit all of them in an hour program, so I will be feeding them in future podcasts. It was a little noisy there, so I do apologize for the background noise, but it was a lot of fun. It was actually the best 2 days I ever had in this field. I had a blast. I want to talk a little bit, first of all, about Kent Center, who put this together. It was his brainchild. What a nice man with a great family, and he did a tremendous job. The speakers were absolutely wonderful. They were professional, discussing scientific approaches. Every one of them was extremely approachable and kind. A lot of great laughs we had, good senses of humor. I guess you have to have that in this field. I strongly suggest anyone listening to this to try to get to the next one, which may be coming up in about 6 months down there, the same theme. Our website is podcastufo.com. It's full of interesting blogs and articles. We have an active forum, and you can also listen to back episodes that we have. There's a lot going on with our Facebook page. We have over 5,000 likes on that. Peggy is managing that. Thank you, Peggy. You're doing a great job. Michael Loke, who writes most of the articles, will be back next week with a UFO news roundup. That's it for now, and I hope you enjoy today's show. I'm with Kent Center. How you doing, Kent?
Doing good. Doing real well today. How you doing?
Great. Nice job.
Thank
you've
you.
Done here.
Thank you.
And we started right out, but the first part of the symposium, seeing your video.
Right.
And you're on a race against time, basically, and you decide to put this together. Can you kind of go over that?
Yeah, I've got multiple myeloma, terminal cancer, and I've been fighting this disease for almost 5 years now, so...
Yeah,
I'm coming out of remission. I've got to go do another battle with chemo, or whether we choose that or stem cell. The survival rates aren't too good on this disease I've got. As a matter of fact, six others that were diagnosed and treated when I got treated, all of them have passed away. The last one about 2 years ago. So,
wow,
I've outraced everybody there. So,
yeah, yep.
We're sitting there, and I'm getting ready to, as soon as this conference is over, wanting to get this done, and then I'll go to get the treatments.
So you decided this was, and first of all, I want to say that I'm really sorry you have to go through this.
Oh, that's thank you.
It's a tough one.
It's one of those journeys in life that's just the road I have to go on, you know?
Yeah.
You never know what God chooses for you. So.
Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit about your sightings. Well, your sighting, the one major one you had, that in particular, but why don't you say how this idea was born to put together this conference?
Well, it's after the sighting I had when I was a young kid, that made an impact on me, being growing up right outside of D.C. and with the government, military, people, officials that were around in the neighborhood. My best friend's father worked as deputy director of FAA, flew under Curtis and Mike. I was scared by his statement, what he told me about what he knew, and the gentleman that was locked up because he saw a crash disc, and they locked him up so if he ever got out, he could talk about it, and he would believe him. So it really made an impact on me. It really terrified me, and I shut up about it, but it got my curiosity up. And in the mid-'80s, the video that you saw where I had this sighting, from that moment on, I decided to get involved, start researching, and try to find an answer. Been to a lot of conferences, and I, I didn't like the way the conferences come out with the extraterrestrials, and I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm not saying any of that, but we can't even get past the first step.
Yeah.
Of saying, hey, there's unidentified craft in our airspace. Other countries have, but not us. So my mission was to get all these scientists and the most credible people I could involved in this topic to show the government what other countries do and how they recognize. And it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but they work to get those answers, and they have a better cooperation and better research than us. And we're supposed to be the big superpower. And they're far more advanced in thinking and in and research, and it just is a shame we can't do that. Our pilots can't even talk, and so this is what I'm trying to do, is put an end to this, and where we get some, you know, some backing by the government, some recognition, this validity, for instance, Chicago Air sighting, that occurred, you know, Stevensville, it's on radar documentation. People ask, where's the proof? There's your proof. It's in black and white on the radar sightings, and then you have the visual to back it up by highly credible people, police, pilots. You know, it's. I don't know. I think the media plays a big part in that. And so this way, I've kind of eliminated all their ability to ridicule when they look at the quality of these speakers and hear what they've got to say. You know, do the research.
Do you think this event will go on next year?
I want to do another one in 6 months.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I can tell by things I've gone to and been involved in, you put a heck of a lot of work into this.
A ton. And I also knew that I was coming out of remission, so I was kind of the race against time. I was in a rush.
Yeah.
But now that I've done this, emotionally and I feel happy. I feel, you know, I'm able to accomplish that now.
Yeah.
I'll go do my chemo battle and do whatever, but while I'm doing it, I'm planning for the next event.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, I got to plan now. And
the
next one's going to be even a little bit more thought out and planned out and advertised. Properly. We spent a ton of money in advertising. I think the Bassett conference hurt us the way, you know, the quality of the congressman. I just think it was opened up for media to bash, and they just took advantage of it. And the focus was on the congressmen that were there and who they were and what kind of background they had, and not the witnesses and not the validity of what they saw. There was so much unbelievably great testimony, and I'll give Steve Bassett credit on that. He pulled a good group of highly credible witnesses, but it was all destroyed by the media dealing with those congressmen that chose. It's just a bad scene. You know, I would wish he would have just did without the mock Congress hearing and just went ahead and you know, tried to do another just disclosure hearing with these witnesses. We got to pound out the truth, and that's the only way you're going to do it. You know, you can't attack the government.
Yeah.
You know, like Leslie just said in her talk right there, that's the last place you want to go. You're not going to get their help or get them to even think about it when you're sitting there bashing.
Because most of them don't know.
No, they don't.
If any of them
they're
do
totally
at all.
Totally unaware.
Yeah.
Everything in the government's compartmentalized, just like the military.
That's right.
Compartmentalized. Yeah. There's so much that people think the government knows. There's so much they don't know.
Yeah.
If they knew, why would they have their jets chasing the craft down in Stevensville? You know?
Yeah.
Why would they? And if they had this secret project, use that secret project to go chase the secret project or whatever. It just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah.
We go in with helicopters to get bin Laden. If this thing that was over my head in Parkwood in the 80s in North Carolina, if they used this thing, they could have just snuck right in there. Never would have been seen and never been heard.
Yeah.
So why use a helicopter?
That's a good point for
people need to think, you know. I'm sure there are secret projects, you know. I'm sure there's tons of secret projects, but that's as hard to prove as the unidentified craft themselves. I mean, so let's just focus on what we do know.
Yeah.
What we can prove in black and white and go from there. So
yeah.
That's the way to go about it.
Well, thank you so much for your hard work.
Oh,
I'm totally
doing,
enjoying it here.
Keep doing
Thanks
a
very
good
much.
Job, buddy. Thank you.
I'm with Alejandro Rojas at the symposium in North Carolina. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm so glad you were willing to join me. It's kind of fun seeing you here.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to meet you, too.
Yeah. So you're from Open Minds Radio. For the listener that may not have heard of your show, but I'm sure most people have, as far as I know. I mean, I actually get emails, people quoting your show and things like
that. Oh, cool.
So how long, can you tell a little history of the show and the type of people you interview?
Yeah, the show actually started off, I started off doing the news for Tim at UFO TV, had a show that he did called UFO Not, and actually he wasn't the host, his buddy Jesse was, and so they had me come on and do the news for a while. And there were a lot of people I wanted to talk to. At the time, I was a MUFON investigator. I think I was doing PR for MUFON at the time, too. So I decided to also do my own show, and that's where it started off. And it's just a lot of fun because it's just, you know, there's a lot of people I would talk up and ask questions about for different purposes. And I thought, well, why not record these phone calls? Because they're a lot of fun, and I know other people want to hear this stuff, too. So I decided to record them and do a podcast with it, and so I started doing that.
About what year was that, would you say?
That was probably 2008, I'm pretty sure.
Uh-huh.
So
kind of early in the podcasting world.
Yeah, I called it UFO Think Tank just because
I like that.
Still kind of how I think of things. Really, you know, I think that's kind of the stage we're at, where a think tank is a group that gets together of educated people to discuss the what-ifs and the data and where should we go and to think about things with the data that they have. And it's kind of an early stage before things get implemented. And I think that's kind of at a stage we're at where we need to think, you know, as a society more about this and the best way to approach it, which is why events like this are great. So that's what I thought, a UFO think tank. I'm talking to some of the great people in this field about the field, and you know, hopefully all of us together, including the listeners, then can figure out where to go with this stuff. And then eventually I started working for Open Minds, and so I just started doing the podcast as Open Minds.
Mm-hmm. And that's very popular.
Yeah, it's grown tremendously. I use a thing called Blog Talk to do the podcast, which is I really like because they automate a lot of stuff. And they've got something like 70,000 shows, and we're usually in the top 20. So,
really?
Yeah,
wow.
Tens of thousands of listeners, and we're usually the number one when it comes to paranormal. So,
and yeah. How does a listener find your show, and when does it come out, basically?
We usually we pre-record, but I usually post them 2 o'clock on Mondays. Mm-hmm. The beginning, the news part, and the end, we do record, you know, just before I post it, so that's up-to-date news. And they could either go to openminds.tv or to Blog Talk to find it. But openminds.tv is the easiest place to go. You can hit the radio page and go there. And plus, Open Minds TV is where we have all the news items that we talk about, so people can go look at the news as we talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the symposium so far, because
okay.
It's been, to me, it's been great.
Yeah.
You know, we just got done watching Richard Haynes, mm-hmm, from NARCAP, and I thought that was great. What do you think about that? I mean,
I love it. You know, this symposium is right down the alley for me, and I think listeners probably would know that, because it's very credible stuff. It's scientists, it's professors, it's the direction I think we need to go.
Absolutely.
A lot of people will say, well, we already know X, Y, and Z, and they don't really go there. Well, maybe, but the thing is that, especially if you read Leslie Kane's book and Alexander Wendt, who's going to be speaking here, he really frames it well in his book where in order to move this forward, we kind of have to be militantly agnostic in, mm-hmm, that to really get this out to the public, to get the public thinking about it, we need them to think about UFOs first as a phenomena, as a mystery. And when they investigate that, we'll see where that takes them. For many people, it takes them to not just the extraterrestrial hypothesis, but to actually invest in that and say, hey, I think there's evidence that this is the answer. We'll let people come to that if they will. If you feel strongly that that's where the data is going to take people, then at least get people interested in the topic and then let them find their own way to whatever conclusion. And I think that's the important part. And if we can get more and more of the professors and scientists and the mainstream involved, obviously this event shows that they are interested. There are people of that ilk that are interested. If we can encourage that, and instead of being, a lot of people are really combative with that group, and work together, I think then we can get more involvement in that area, and I think that then we could really move things forward.
I think that it was pretty interesting listening to Richard a few minutes ago about how he agrees that people should get involved. There's possible air safety issues, and he went through all the different cases step by step, and he's kind of looking for a grassroots movement too toward, you know, I think that's kind of what this whole symposium is based on, is the grassroots has to work at trying to come together. And
but you know what's funny, and you know, I'm just going to say this because I think that this is an issue, and I think I talked with Leslie Kane, and we talked a lot about this recently, and that this symposium kind of is an example of how the U.S. might go about having an official investigative group, where it might lay, where France, they have it in their NASA type of group, and Chile, mm-hmm. they have it in their FAA type of group. Where would we have it in the U.S.? U.K. is a demonstration of the PR issues that they've had. And I think if we did have this in the United States, there would be PR issues. The PR issues then make someone like Richard Haynes be very afraid of using the term UFO.
Right.
And I really have a problem with that because on twofold. Is that, okay, UAP, if someone asks you, what's a UAP?
You don't know what
UFA.
It is.
You're going to have to say it's a UFO.
Oh, I see, to translate
it. Yeah, so it's like, what's a UAP? It's a UFO. Yeah. So you got to go
it's
there
semantics.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And he had to explain that at the beginning of his talk. Mm-hmm. The other problem is that, for instance, we asked him for an interview. I've done this before and had asked him to come to conferences. He won't because he doesn't want to get involved with UFO stuff. At the same time, he's here speaking at a UFO conference, and he was bummed out that people, he was visibly a little disappointed that people hadn't read their report on one of the UFO cases. Well, if you don't want to associate with UFO people, and then they're not, and you're not communicating with them, how are they going to know that you've got a report? They're not going to know that. And not only that, it's treating people who are already interested in the topic like they're second class somehow, or they're not as important as others. So I think I understand the issue with the PR around the idea of UFOs, but I think the bigger, more difficult task, which people try to skirt, is that we've got to change the perceptions of UFO, the term itself. And I know that's mm-hmm. difficult, but I think if we stand strong and say, you know, we're interested in UFOs, we're not shy about that, and so are a lot of credible people, I think we can change those perceptions, and I think it's happening over time.
I was thinking that he would never be on my show in general because it's called Podcast UFO.
Yeah.
The word's right in it.
Yeah, so we can't have these kind of battles internal with ourselves. And I think that, you know, I talked to Nick Pope about this last week because he felt that the UK gave in to the pressures of the PR problems. And that's why they closed their UFO desk mostly when, like he says, they should have just stood strong like he does. And face it, you know, he's not afraid to say, I investigate UFOs, but a lot of mainstream stuff as well. And he's interviewed on a lot of defense topics that are mainstream, that aren't fringe. And it hasn't hurt him because I think he takes that strong stance. If the United States or if there was a serious UFO group, they would have to bear the weight of that PR problem. But we do that. You know, at Open Minds, I'm sure you do that, where mm-hmm. we get critics on either side of any issue because people are very passionate about it.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, that's fine. We just push forward, and we know there are a lot of people who are, and even those critics come back every day. So they're looking at our site every day. They're reading our stuff every day. And they're not critical of everything. Sometimes we're doing stuff that is of their opinion. But the point is that you can't shy away from that kind of stuff, especially if you're getting into a field that is, there are a lot of strong opinions. You just got to stay strong and push forward.
Now, what do you think about the lack of press here? I'm a little bit surprised.
Well, there has been some press, but I know that can be difficult. And I don't know how the press was handled here. Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, over the years, we've learned about sending press releases often and to who, and it takes a long time to build that sort of thing. So, and you really have to emphasize and figure out how to concisely communicate why you know, things are, this is important and how it's different.
Yeah.
Let's say from the citizens' hearing, because certainly a lot of the speakers here, they didn't feel comfortable with, you know, speaking at the citizens' hearing.
Yeah.
They didn't feel, because there's some aspects of that they felt were incredible.
The ET.
Yeah, going all the way to the ET thing. So I guess that's some of the challenge. Luckily, there's been some local news, but so it's hard to say what the root of that is. Was there not enough outreach to get out to the public, or was the public or the media just not interested?
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, well, as our listeners can hear, the crowd's coming back in. It's getting a little noisy. So thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure.
Hopefully the listeners who haven't checked your show out will.
Thank you very much.
And all right.
We'll have you on my show soon.
Oh, that'd be great. Okay. I'm with Xavier Poisson from, and how do you pronounce it?
JEPON.
JEPON, which actually stands for Unidentified Aerospace Phenomena Task Force. Is it essentially part of what we have on NASA or similar?
Yes, it's the CNES, National French Space Agency, is more or less the same attribution as NASA, except that we don't address the aeronautics the subject. We only address space subject, only rockets and satellites.
Uh-huh. And how does France view the UFO issue? You take that in a scientific approach.
The goal of the JEPON is to analyze the report sightings coming from the French population and to try to find explanation. If we can, that's good. If we cannot, we classify it as unidentified, but we don't enter the debate of the origin of this.
Mean where it might be from?
Yeah. So yes. The question for us is not alien or not. The question is explain, identified or not.
That's such a simple concept.
Yeah.
It seems like the United States should be able to swallow that one, just trying to discover what it is that is out there instead of trying to put who's riding in it, or who's behind the wheel, so to speak. When you were talking, I saw that you have a sighting report rating. How does that exactly work? The rating, how you rate your sightings.
Oh, the rating.
Yes.
The rating, that's very difficult, the rating. We have two scales. The first scale is the strangeness of the case. For example, is it close encounter? Is it only light in the sky? That's a level of strangeness on one way. On the other way is the consistency of the report.
Of the witness's report?
Yes, mm-hmm. Of the witness's report. It's not the not only the reliability of the witness, we don't try to rate the witness itself.
Uh-huh.
No,
yeah.
We rate the report and are there one witness or several? Okay, one witness a bit, of course, is weaker than several. As have we photographs? Which evidence have we about direction? About are there prints or something like that? That's a consistency, and we request the bigger consistency for stranger events. If somebody says that a flying saucer was in this garden, we'll request, if possible, two witnesses or photographs or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And you have basically transparency on your organization.
We try to have the maximum transparency. The best example is that we publish the genuine report of the witness, except the fact that we withdraw the name.
Yeah.
Such a way that the witness will not be annoyed by. So we publish it with the same words, with exactly the genuine. and with our conclusion. So if the public wants to check our every job, the job we have done, he has everything. He has a genuine report. He has the for example, the weather report. He has a satellite forecast report. We put everything. So we have a really we really want to show everything. We publish our methods, and so if anybody want to check our job, it's possible. Yes, everything to do that.
That's right. It all makes perfect sense to me. When you were showing a couple of the case situations, you showed the Chinese lanterns, and I'm telling you, they're a pain in the butt, aren't they?
That's awful for us.
Like, I'm sure you get a lot of calls about them.
Sure. Yeah. Every Monday morning, we have several.
Worldwide.
Yeah.
Can't do much
except
about that.
When it's rainy all over France. That's
yeah.
But Chinese lanterns has some advantages because it shows how people behave in front of a strange phenomenon.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting for psychosociologists.
Yes.
Because they have a very good example of a reaction of the.
Yep.
Of people in front of something which was not known.
Can you just briefly touch on a couple of the sightings that were really unexplained and really, I'm trying to remember which ones you showed, I'm sorry.
I've shown 10 lights above a church.
Yes.
That's quite strange. But for example, on this case, on the first time the witness reported, she described a kind of vessel with 10 lights on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we asked her, have you really seen the vessel or only the lights? Okay, she told, I've seen the light.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but it's very important, because the level of strangeness is not the same between lights and a solid
but
object.
There were some reports with crafts and...
Yeah, and it's very difficult for us to...
Or objects, I should say, not crafts.
Yes. But we have Chinese lanterns. We have many reports of Chinese lanterns where witnesses describe spacecraft.
They actually see... They think they see something.
Yeah, but it's a thing which is well known in psychology, in a cognitive psychology. I don't know if it's a word correct. Yeah. It's well known that when you see a set of lights on a dark background, your brain creates a shape.
Well, it's like I've heard your brain wants to create faces out of things when you're looking
around.
I mean,
so
it'll do that.
It's very well known by psychologists.
Yes.
So it's a part of the process of the analyze of the report case. When a witness describes, for example, a triangle or a vehicle with one light at each edge, we translate it as three lights.
Now, how about daylight sightings during the day?
Daylight, we have plenty. We have plenty. Very often there are balloons. There are balloons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know that there are many shapes.
Yes.
There are many shapes of balloon.
Yes, we were talking about a helium shark that someone...
Yeah, there are shark.
Know. Yeah.
There are Mickeys. There are... Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a bunch of balloons.
Yeah.
Very bizarre shape.
Especially if it's like a little bit dark, you just see it like...
Yes, and there are
silhouette.
Several colors, and it's more or less shining, and it moves with the sun. And it makes very strong, very... strange aspect.
Plus the solar balloon, I'd never seen that before. It's like a tube.
Also the solar balloons. That's for cigar. It makes cigar.
And it's pretty big, right?
It can be very big.
And it floats for several hours.
So during all this daylight observation, the key issue is the direction and the speed.
Uh-huh.
So the first check we do is check with the wind.
Yep.
And we have generally quite a clear... We don't to consider too much the shape, which is very strange for the winners. But for us, it's, the shape has no importance.
Wow.
The important thing is how it moves.
Uh-huh.
If it moves straight or more or less straight with the wind, the shape is not very important because we can make the balloon the shape you want. So.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah.
And I hope you have a nice, safe trip back home to France.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I'm with Gary. How are you doing, Gary?
Very well, thank you.
We had an interesting conversation, I thought, the other night at the meet and greet. And you have quite a background. Can you talk a little bit about it?
I became interested in ufology back in the 1960s, at about the time of the Betty and Barney Hill incident that occurred in on September 9th in Franconia Notch, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
That was the cornerstone UFO event that probably brought out more phenomena related to the abduction phenomena than any other event that ever occurred.
Yes, yeah. Your working background, I find, is you have a real science background.
I worked in as an aeronautical engineer for years.
Yeah.
And in the process of working in aeronautical engineering, I met many people who were interested in what was going on out in space, other than just plain aircraft and missiles.
Is that right? Wow. Wow. And you actually worked on the moon lander?
Well, I worked actually on a number of different projects. I probably, over a period of 20 years as a contract engineer, worked on probably 10 or 12 or 15 different projects, including the space shuttle and stealth fighters and cruise missiles. And the list is, you know, it's been a fascinating lifestyle, interesting in terms of working on projects that really were brand new, cutting-edge technology over the years.
Stealth. That's, you had a pretty high clearance level.
Well, I had to in order to be able to work on Department of Defense projects. And So.
Now, did you keep your UFO interest kind of to yourself?
No. Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes.
How about, did you have any interaction at all from other people quietly about it that you worked
well,
with?
Well, I think so. And I had the opportunity to speak with astronauts about it when I was working for working on the space shuttle down in Florida. So that part was interesting too, to be able to take advantage of the perspective of someone who has actually gone out into space.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I found the astronauts to be very, very interesting and very, very candid about experiences that they had had. I know that much of what they worked with was meant to be kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
But on occasion, over a cup of coffee, they would discuss things that they might not make public in an auditorium somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Now, didn't you say that you met Gordon Cooper?
Yes, I did.
And he told you about... Can you talk about that?
Well, Gordon had UFO experiences going all the way back into Germany in the 1960s when he was flying an F-86 fighter out of a base in Germany. He had gone up on several occasions with other members of his F-86 squadron to intercept unknowns that were flying into Germany from the north and the east. Being the gutsy guy that he was, had taken his F-86 to well up over 45,000 feet to try to intercept UFOs that they felt were encroaching on the military base there in Germany. And they didn't know that it wasn't an antagonistic government making an aerial flight over Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they concluded that that it was UFOs.
Yeah,
he set a record actually in terms of taking his F-86 up. I don't think anyone had ever taken an F-86 up to the...
Yeah, that's really pushing it, isn't
up
it?
Up to the, you know, the altitudes that he was flying at.
That's almost into space.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that at the altitudes he was flying at that the F-86 was equipped to support a pilot at those altitudes. He might have been able to get up to 40 or 42,000 feet.
Now, you were telling me about the UFO that landed on the base, and they all filmed it and everything?
Well, he was a base security officer in California on one of the bases. And as a base security officer, his responsibility was to be made aware of any incursions that were made on that base facility. I'm not sure that I should mention the name of the Air Force base, but he had about a 75-foot in diameter disc-shaped craft come right down within the perimeter of the base, and that was absolutely startling as far as they were concerned.
Yeah.
And they took extensive photography of the craft while it was on the ground on a tripod type landing gear. They took 2.25 color slides. They took 35 millimeter color slides. They took moving pictures of this thing while it was on the ground. And his instructions were never to look at any of the photographs of any of this equipment, because it was all meant to be packed away in a plain envelope and sent right away to the Pentagon.
Yep.
In Washington.
Yep.
But he confided in me. He said, you know, they didn't say that I couldn't look at the negatives in the darkroom.
Yeah.
And I guess he did take a peek at some of the photographs they had taken. But once they were in that little manila envelope and in the mail, they never saw the photographs again.
Yeah. Would you say that the astronauts that you spoke with, did most of them have an open mind about UFOs, what they are and all that?
I think they went out into space with the realization that that we might very well contact other intelligences.
Mm-hmm.
There are two different approaches here. Number one is that, well, okay, we may very well meet intelligent species out there, but how do we deal with that? Do we embrace them with open arms, or do we react in a military defensive type posture if we encounter them?
Wow. All right. So, a man of your background, if you had to guess about their propulsion of some of the sightings that have been seen, the right angle turns at, what were we told today, 3,600 miles an hour or something like that? How could that be possible? What would you think about that?
It's quite obvious to me that if an aircraft is capable of making a right angle turn at about 3,500 miles an hour, an individual in that craft would be experiencing about 50 Gs during that right angle turn. So I know what our pilots are capable of in our fighter and our attack aircraft. They're probably capable of a 9G turn.
Is it really that high?
Somewhere, because if they're wearing a pressurized suit that will enable them to cope with the dramatic influence on blood flow while they're experiencing those Gs. But it's evident to me that these advanced civilizations are working with propulsion systems that are way beyond our understanding.
Yeah.
And they apparently have the ability. They've figured out ways to cope with the tremendous G forces that a living being would experience inside one of those craft.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they figured out a whole different type of gravity type of situation.
Well, that's possible too.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and really enjoyed meeting you.
You're welcome, and it's my pleasure too as well.
Thank you. Leslie Kane, we finally get to meet in person. How are you?
Yeah, it's great to meet you, Martin.
Yes.
I'm so glad you could come to the conference.
Me too. And what do you think so far? I think it's been great.
It's a great conference. It's just exceptional. I'm really, really pleased, and I'm pleased with the quality of the audience too. Very intelligent questions, thoughtful people,
right.
No kind of... rambling monologues or fringe kinds of questions. It's been very scientific and official and serious and very fascinating, too.
Yeah, yeah. I really love the lineup here. The last time you and I podcast together, you started talking about what you're going to reveal, so everybody's been waiting. So can you talk about it now?
Well, I hope they liked it.
Yeah.
It was a case out of Chile that I actually been given exclusive access to by the official agency there. That it's never been made public before, this conference. And it's better if it's a more visual case.
That's
but
right.
Just to talk about it a little bit, it involved three witnesses at an Air Force Academy in Santiago who saw, one of them was a sergeant who had been many years at the Air Force Academy there, and this is where they train their generals, their colonels, very high-level people. And they saw these lights, five lights come in from the mountains, from the Andes Mountains towards them. At first they thought they were helicopters, but they realized they were completely silent.
Yeah.
So these, we'll call them objects, lights, I don't know what to call them, but they came towards them, they formed a horizontal line, then a triangle, and then a circle, three distinct formations.
Yeah.
Two of the witnesses pulled out their cell phones with cameras and videotaped it. And one of the videos, you really can't see it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's hard for cell phones to capture these things. But what you have is the man who filmed it narrating exactly what he was seeing. And his reactions is, oh, my God. And, you know, the birds are going crazy. So the audio is fantastic.
Birds don't call at night.
And at one point when he gets excited because of what he's seeing, the birds get excited too.
Yeah.
Now, they're not reacting to what the human is saying. They're reacting to something else. So I thought that was interesting.
And it was one of the videos, the cell phone videos that they enhanced a little bit. You could see.
You could see the phenomenon. The equivalent of the FBI in Chile took it into a lab and just enhanced it, increased the contrast a little bit. You can clearly see the triangular shape in that one.
See the formations,
And then they pulled some stills from it in which you can really see clearly that. And what's really fascinating to me about the triangular formation is there were five objects, but a triangle only contains three, right? So I was thinking, well, in a formation of three, what happened to the other two? Well, if you look at the photograph that they pulled out from the video, you can see that the two of the objects paired up with another. Two of the points on the triangle were pairs of objects. So there were still five. Yeah. Two of them got really close together on one apex. Two got close together on another apex. And in the third apex, there were one. Mm. So, I mean, what kind of intelligence does that demonstrate?
Yeah.
That these objects bunch together in order to form a triangle.
There, of course, there's no answers here, but there's still some really good points made. And I think one of the more enjoyable people, kind of surprised me, was Jeffrey Bennett the other night. What did you think about his
presentation? Oh, I thought his lecture was fabulous. Yeah,
he's
an astronomer, astrophysicist, educator. Yeah. He's a straight scientist, got nothing to do with UFOs, not particularly interested in UFOs, but he came in as our science lecture Saturday night. And
but he's
fascinating.
Not opposed to them, or he's not a debunker of any
exactly, kind. Just sort of open, you know, but explored the scientific perspective on could there be alien life and all the issues related to that. Talked about the discovery of exoplanets by Kepler. What do
and
we know about the moons, the Mars, all these interesting things about the universe and the solar system.
Well, it really kind of boiled down to that it's a real high probability that there's life out there, which, you know, we all been saying, but he was doing it statistically, which was very fascinating to me.
Exactly. From a scientific perspective, I mean, highly probable that there's life out there. The big question, of course, is getting that life from there to here.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's harder for scientists to deal with, and for all of us, really. I mean, when you think about how vast the space is, of course.
I know. When he was talking about the size of the sun, if it was scaled down to a grapefruit, our Earth would be about 16 meters away, I think you said, the size of a ball and a ballpoint pen.
Right, tiny.
The moon, a quarter bit of that, 2 inches out, and that's the farthest we ever traveled.
Right.
And Alpha Centauri, our nearest star, all the way in California.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, you hear that
you
for
think,
scale.
How could UFOs possibly come from anywhere else? That's what you think. It's very good. It's sobering.
Yeah.
It makes us step back and, you know, realize we have to be very circumspect and scientific about this. It's really mind-boggling.
Yeah. Now, as far as the different people that were lecturing this weekend, are their DVDs going to be available separately?
Yes.
Or, they are separately.
DVDs will be available, I think, in a couple of weeks on the website for it. And I'll post on my Facebook page as soon as they're available. And I just think I'm so happy because I'm going to want to get all of them.
Oh, yes, I'm going to get them.
And I recommend them to people who couldn't make it because these are really exceptional talks.
So will it be on the it'll be on the website?
It'll be on the conference website. I'll definitely make an announcement about it when they're available and give you links and everything.
Which is actually, for the listener, it's CUFORNC.com. That's CUFORN.com.
Right, the Center for UFO Research North Carolina is what it's the acronym for.
So what's next for Leslie Kane?
I'm not sure, really. I've got a bunch of possible writing projects. I want to write up something on this AGA case, the new Chilean case, for the Huffington Post. I'm also working on the French edition of my book.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the ninth foreign language edition.
I just heard you speaking French with a lady.
A little bit of French.
A little bit, but...
I'm not doing the translation by any means, but I'm working on some changes because the Petit Rechin photograph of the Belgian thing that De Brouwer talked about, General De Brouwer, yesterday.
Yeah.
It's questionable now. It's
It is.
We have to basically assume it was a hoax.
You know, you can, but even yesterday I heard controversy about that, saying that the guy felt as though that he did not get enough money for it when he sold it, and then so he's claiming it's a hoax just to spoil that so he can resell it or something.
I don't think the Belgian investigators who have actually spoke to him would agree with that. I mean, I think they're pretty convinced, and these are people who really care, so they're not out to debunk anything. Yeah. You know, I've spoken to Patrick Farron, who actually went and interviewed him for hours, and they've done a lot of work on it. They've gotten two other people to corroborate that they were there at the time.
When he made the model?
Yeah.
You know, that is such an awesome picture, too.
It was so disappointing.
It was my favorite picture for you.
Yeah,
you know,
but even so, even if there's still, let's say, a 10%, 20% chance that it might be real, we still have to eliminate it from our repertoire of evidence because it's too controversial. So what I'm doing in the French edition of the book, since it's going to be sold in Belgium, we're going to remove that photograph and put an addendum in explaining why, and then replace it with others. So I need to get that to the publisher, and I'm kind of working with the guy who's translating it.
Yeah.
He has various questions and issues, so we go back and forth a lot. So that takes a lot of time.
Yeah. You know, your book seemed to come up a lot this weekend. That must have made you feel good.
It
did. Your book.
What really makes me feel good is when a human being, a person, comes up to me, which many did here, and just tell me what the book meant to them personally. Yeah. And it's just so gratifying for me to hear. You know, one woman said it circulated all over around her family. Her father's a professor at a university. It's the only UFO book he'd ever read. It really affected him.
See,
you know,
actually
people
changed
someone's
life.
Oh, definitely.
You know, that's a great feeling.
And one guy said, I've been reading UFO books for 25 years, and this is by far the best. I mean, it's just so satisfying to me because, number one, it took so much work for me to do it. And number two, because of the other contributors to the book. You know, there's over a dozen other people who wrote chapters, and to me, it's a collective effort, and it includes some of the people who are at this conference. And
plus,
it means they're being recognized.
Right.
Know?
And I can tell you are someone that is very careful about what you do, and we all, I think, I can speak for a lot of people. We all appreciate the wonderful work you do, but I can't imagine how careful you would be writing that book. I mean, how much time you took.
I was very careful.
Did it take a long time to put together?
Yeah, I mean, it was based on many, you know, 11 years of work that sort of all distilled into that, but the actual book itself took a lot of time.
Yeah.
And I was on deadlines. I had a Random House as a very good publisher, and you have a whole schedule you have to follow because they want to get it out at a certain time based on the marketing potential of that time.
Yep.
We picked the summer because they figured, not a lot of other books come out in the summer, so there's not much competition.
Yeah.
And number two, people are out on the beach and they want to read about UFOs in the summer. It's sort of vacation time. So they figured for that reason we needed to get it out in the summer. And so, you know, from the very beginning, everything is mapped out over a period of like over a year.
Wow.
So when certain deadlines have to be met,
when
the first draft, second draft, the photographs, this or that. So you have to follow this strict, and that makes it high pressure, and you know, I just had to do nothing else.
But
it's hard work.
And
then I was working with all these other contributors, and some of them didn't even speak English. So I had to hire translators to do both communications for me and to translate their work. And you have to go back to them because even though they may be expert witnesses or expert investigators, they may not think of everything that needs to be said. So my job was to come back and say, well, here you've got this great case, but could you describe what the object looked like, or could you say certain things that they just don't think to include that as a journalist I know how to tell a story, you see? Yeah. So part of my job was to work with each of the contributors that way, and that took a lot of time and effort as well.
Now, did your book go into any other languages, or is it the first one? It did.
Oh, it's probably been in 8 or 9 countries now, including China, Brazil.
Wow, that's so great.
Oh, I'm thrilled with that. Yeah. Croatia, Taiwan, Germany.
Uh-huh. Gee, that's amazing.
More than that. I don't remember all of them, but...
Well, I posted your picture on Facebook, and I had some requests. They said they can't wait to listen to the podcast, so
great.
I'm really glad. You know, it was really tough to meet up with you. You're so busy here, everybody wanting to talk to you.
Well, what can I say?
Yeah. So, anyway, it's been great.
So great to meet you, Martin, and thanks for doing the great podcast that you do. I really appreciate the work you do. I'm so glad you came here to interview people here.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
Keep on doing it.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Jose Lai from Chile, how are ya?
I'm fine, Mike.
Well, it's so great to meet in person. And we've had a lot of great talks since we've been here.
Oh, well, it is my pleasure in the first place to meet you again, you know?
Yeah.
Come on, shake hands.
We're shaking hands, a little behind the scenes here. So how did you enjoy doing your talk here? You seem to have a really good response.
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
I've never been congratulated so many times in my life.
That's wonderful. There's no better example, in my opinion, of any country doing what you're doing.
Well, I think this conference gave me the chance to reassure me, and I'm going to bring the message back home, that we are doing the right job.
Yeah.
In the right way.
Well, you'll be able to show them the DVD in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yes, I hope so.
That'll be proof, but they'll have to learn how to speak English, right?
No, everyone in my office speaks English.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Now, you know, I never realized this until you showed up on the screen there that Chile is such a long, skinny country.
Yes.
And how many miles is the length of
Chile? Oh, my God.
It's all coastline.
Yes, you can imagine. We begin with a desert, the driest desert in the world, and we end up down in the Antarctic, which
that is
eternal ice.
I just, you know, I thought I knew most of South America, what it looked like, but I just forgot all about Chile being where it is. Now, where is the telescopes? Is that the northern part by the desert?
In the northern part of the country, yes.
The picture that you showed with, you could see the Milky Way above the cactus.
Yes.
Was that a real picture?
Yes, of course.
I can't believe the sky's there.
Well, you can go in Google or whatever and take images from the north of Chile, and you are going to see very similar sky like the one I showed.
That was just beautiful.
It's beautiful, yes.
Now, geographically, where is your main office in that big, long strip of country?
It is just about in the middle.
But that's convenient.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Very convenient.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was pretty funny you were talking about you had your alien and you had your...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We keep that.
They have a jarred alien in their office, a little green thing. It is really... You have a good sense of humor.
Oh, we all have a good sense of humor in our office. Yeah. We laugh every day.
Our last speaker.
I guess this is going to be it for us.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Okay. It's been a real pleasure meeting you. You're a lot of fun.
No.
I'd like to hang out with you more.
I hope we can repeat this and we do it again.
Okay, me too.
Okay, we do it again.
So I want to see what's going on in the future.
We do it properly.
Yes,
okay.
You bet. All right, take care.
It will be my pleasure, Martin.
Yes, thank
you.
My
pleasure.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Remember, I'll be feeding in those short clips of other interviewees in future podcasts. Don't forget to check out our website, podcastufo.com. You can get to our Facebook page and forum from there. Check out the articles and past episodes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Keep your eyes to the sky and your curiosity high. Wow, I just made that up.